only thing better than watching TV is taking it personally.
You guys, it's taking it personally. Now, I have heard from you, the AGs, the tippers, about a little... About a little show called Summer House. And I have heard from you, Sarah. When are you going to deep dive that godforsaken episode that's keeping me up late at night? And here I am with just a couple thoughts. I do feel like as we go into the later part, latter part, half of the season. Words are fun. Happy anniversary if you've checked my Instagram. So as we get into the kind of, you know, last days of summer, I really feel like Summer House has taken up all of the space in my brain. And while I do know that VPR had part two of its reunion and the Valley had what I believe was a season finale tonight, I spent this evening rewatching Summer House because the last episode and the after show was so fucking frustrating, but also fascinating that I haven't been able to get it out of my head. And so, you know, there's been a bunch of episodes that I've recorded that have gone up in the past week, and I knew to myself this week I needed to make the time to deep dive it, especially because we are crossing that point. I mean, Carl said something on the after show that I thought was actually interesting when it comes to timing. And I might be getting this wrong, but he said something along the lines of like the argument that he had with Lindsay that we saw at the tail end, latter end of the episode, shout out luggage, the emotional baggage he refused to carry. But I mean, that's probably because he has more than enough of his own. That argument, they had an argument later that night at or later that weekend at their apartment. And he was like, we slept in separate rooms. And that wasn't even the last weekend of the summer. And I might have heard him incorrectly. It's entirely possible. But I thought he said something along the lines of like, it wasn't even the last weekend of the summer. Like there was still like another week or two more weeks, which makes me feel like we are quickly approaching the actual filmed breakup. And I think that there's a lot to say about where we are in Carl and Lindsay's relationship. But the thing I just want to say, I just want to put out there, based on the fact that, you know, we have eyes, we're watching what's happening, we're hearing it, we're hearing about it, we're seeing the cast reactions, everybody's on the same page, that no one is on the same page. And that is at least something. It's not like people are pretending that their engagement is going in a great direction. I think everybody's on the same page of like, this isn't going great. It's just a matter of trying to figure out who's most to blame. All of that being said, especially because of that being said, I don't understand how Lindsay went on a podcast. I think it was her first on Vile Files. I think it was her first, like, you know, in-depth pod recording after the breakup and said that she was blindsided. There's a lot to say about Carl's behavior and Carl acting like a big fucking brat and some shit. It's like making me rethink shit that I immediately empathized with him about earlier in the season. Cause now I'm thinking, you know, there were those scenes in the cars where I'm just kind of going based on the fact that maybe I was sort of believing Carl's story more than Lindsay's, based on Lindsay's record of, you know, being explosive and reactive. But now, based on what I'm seeing in what's actually being filmed, I'm thinking to myself, I have no idea what happened in those goddamn cars. I cannot be sure that Carl's version of events is the version that took place. There's stuff to hold Lindsay accountable for. Lindsay has more than enough of a dossier of examples of poor behavior, of being reactive, but she also has added several chapters of responding well, responding decently, trying, And I just, it's making me look back. It's like, I don't know if this is normalized changing your mind based on new information. I guess it is. I mean, hello, mission statement. I think it is. I think it's normalizing adding more nuance in situations that I didn't fully consider based on the information I had at that point. And the burden for Lindsay is she brings with her such baggage because of her behavior, because of the kinds of relationships she was in. Not to say that she's solely responsible for, you know, being in toxic relationships, but just to say she's the cast member on this show for a reason. She's a great reality TV star for a reason. That doesn't always pan out for a partner in a relationship with someone like that. BCC, literally everyone who's ever dated on Vanderpump Rules. Like, look at Kyle. I would argue Kyle's a great reality TV star. That the attributes that make him great on reality TV make him fucking awful as a partner, at least at this point in his development, pretending that he might be able to grow from here. I mean, jury's out on that. But circling back to that first post-breakup interview, I just don't understand the use of Blindside. I don't know if Lindsay was like trying to get ahead of some of this stuff. I don't know if she was thinking, I just need to, this is going to sound worse than I mean it, like sell this in a way that feels more Ariana coded of saying that she was really taken by surprise. I could understand being not blindsided, but being shocked at Carl ending it. But I don't know that Lindsay was really shocked that it should come to an end. Maybe the surprise is that someone actually made the move to say this is over. But I just don't know that she can genuinely say blindside in the way that I'm taking it. I think the question is like, what's Lindsay's definition of blindside? Because my definition of blindside is like total surprise, had no idea this was coming. And the difficulty in focusing on that word, and maybe this is just like note to self, is that I keep thinking about it as I'm seeing more and more examples of egregious behavior and just terrible dynamics. And that's not all Lindsay, like so much of maybe the last two episodes specifically, but there have been other examples, have been focused on Carl. What the fuck, Carl? Genuinely, what the fuck? There was a moment in rewatching the episode tonight where I physically had to put my head in my hoodie because I couldn't look at the screen because I was so uncomfortable. I was so fucking uncomfortable, and I felt for her. I really did. And if you are, I know I've said this before and I'll say it again. If you are not watching the Summer House After Show on YouTube, it is a literal bonus episode. It doesn't always work out like that. Oftentimes, like the Housewives after shows are just kind of like fluff. Sometimes they're good. The VPR after show, you know, kind of ebbs and flows just depending on who's center stage and who's trying to explain away their behavior by adding in seeming evidence on the after show and kind of making that work in reverse. Summer House is like, no. We're fully continuing the episode here and we're also adding a little bit more information. It doesn't feel like people backpedaling. It feels like people moving very fucking forward. And I could not more highly recommend it on Bravo's YouTube. All of that being said, when I watched which scene, honestly, could a person focus on? The scene in the kitchen, the scene in the bedroom. There's a lot to say. The scene in the bedroom, the scene with the luggage later on. There's a lot going on. And the thing that I'm really, that I can't stop thinking about is Carl's use of softness, which is a word, as Gabby said to Lindsay, you know, this sounds like it's a trigger word for you. I think it's a trigger word for many women. I got into this on a Satchel Spectacular. There's a 2-hour, 2-part Satchel Spectacular up now with a heavy, heavy focus on your thoughts and feels about VPR and definitely Summer House. And just the use of the word softness and how gendered that is, how politicized it is, how weaponized it's become, especially against women. And I think about Carl, and I think about Carl's emotional maturity, immaturity, LOL, immaturity. I think about his bitchiness. I think about how much he was a fucking brat when it came to the luggage and the baggage. And I'm just thinking to myself, he just wants her to stay quiet so he can do whatever the fuck he wants. He wants her to quote unquote support him because that means that she's not going to hold him accountable. He doesn't want a partner. He actually honestly doesn't want a friend. They've taken a huge step back in their relationship. They're not even at the point of like platonic friendship. We are supporting each other. They're well below that. He's at the point of, I just want you to sit there and smile. And then he goes on the after show and is trying to say that, like, no, this all makes sense. That's what I want. I wanted this in a partner, trying to further prove his point. But the point is moot. The point is bad. It's a bad point. And the difficulty with him saying that at the point that he's saying it is he wants her support of what? What is he actually bringing into the table that she should be celebrating? Like, he's talking about the fact that he might have a job opportunity, but maybe not. Or like, he's been telling her X, Y, and Z about how toxic it was to work for Loverboy and work with Kyle. And that's why he left. And now he's maybe going back and he wants her support of maybe signing on to do something with no other information provided, which will have an obvious impact on her life as someone who is supposed to be his partner. He doesn't want her to say a fucking thing except congrats. And I don't care how he spins it of like, no, I wasn't just looking for that. That's exactly what he was looking for. Because we can see examples of her being respectful and being supportive and wanting the best for him and wanting more information. And he takes that as a personal attack because maybe that's just the setup of how relationships work in his mind. Like, maybe this is it. And I don't think he wants a wife. I think he wants a mother. He already has one. We've met her. She's wonderful. For all we've seen, she's great. I wonder if she's watching these episodes. I wonder if Lou is. It's not great. The dynamic between Carl and Lindsay, spoiler alert, is not great. But the part of all of this that drives me so fucking nuts is like, what is he bringing to the table that he's now criticizing her for not supporting? He's dangling carrots. And you know why he's doing that? Because she, I guess, told him or they agreed, but it feels like it was more of like this is the vibe, this is the energy, that in X number of months, he would have a job. In X number of months, after paying however many dollars for a life coach, he would figure out what it was that he wanted to do and he would do it. And the problem that Carl is facing is that the clock has run out. He's maybe not closer to where he was 6 months ago, 12 months ago, whatever. And he's looking for a way to avoid that. And his way of avoiding it is saying, hey, I know that we had an agreement that I was gonna, you know, find work or figure out what I wanted to do in life. I'm not really there yet. And you need to support that I'm not. You need to support that I am there without giving you any information or asking any questions, because he takes questions genuinely as a personal attack. I think if you asked him, he'd be like, no, of course I want information. But when it comes from Lindsay's mouth, because he does not like his fiance, he takes it as a total rebuke. And it felt like in that scene between them, prior to the luggage scene, it felt like he was trying to bait her into expressing upset. It was like he was dangling carrots and being passive aggressive and being just a terrible listener. I mean, god awful and was just trying to get her to be loud and reactive so that he could explain away her behavior as being responsible for the entire dynamic. Like, he's just trying to, you know, make his way through. He's just reacting to her. He's just trying to figure it out. He has an active role in the toxicity that's present in their relationship. And I think because the season started and it was so like heavy on like Lindsay's doing shit that's not great, that there was a whiplash of a feeling of like, wait, hold on, maybe we're going to find out more information and be more on Carl's side in things. And it feels like that whiplash has happened once again, because he's not doing a great job of communicating not only to her, but to us. And the difficulty that I think he faced in that moment is how calm Lindsay was. Like, she explained that blanketed support without any kind of backup of information doesn't make sense. And he was offended by that. He was offended by someone telling him to not even step up, but by someone asking him to explain what the fuck was going on. And so she asks him what he wants, and he says he wants softness and tenderness. It's like he wants softness and tenderness over the fact that he's maybe interested in doing these things that don't have a lot of details. It's like he wants her to be supportive of him having a job interview, but pretending it's a job offer. You don't have any of this stuff on paper. You don't have any of the, you know, like nuts and bolts of this figured out. You're just at the point of like, okay, well, maybe instead of figuring out what I really want to do, I'm just going to do something with Kyle. And I'm not saying that's a bad idea. I actually never understood why once, you know, we sort of understood more about like Carl figuring out his life and moving forward, I actually thought it might be a good idea for him to do a non-alcoholic line with Loverboy. To me, it made sense because he has a built-in relationship with them from a reality TV star collaborative situation, synergy, etc. It would make sense. They're on the same show together. There's even like the tension that we might see in them working together helps with brand recognition, which is, I guess, the best part of working at Loverboy at this point, is the fact that we all know that it exists. But I'm not his partner. I'm not like dealing with him day to day. I'm not hearing him talk about how unhappy he is and frustrated he is. And I'm not getting the sense of things that like Carl and Kyle are going to have a do-over, do better. You know why I don't feel that? Because we're not getting information. I'm not getting a sense that Carl's like, wow, okay, here are the reasons why working together before didn't go great. And here is what we have decided to do, what we've realized, what we've formalized and finalized that will make our next present collaboration more meaningful, a healthier dynamic. This is what we're doing. We're not getting any of that. We're just getting Kyle trying to be a friend to Carl and saying, listen, like if you know, this is something that might work out. Also, LOL, it's like Kyle's being a good friend to Carl. Kyle's also being a business person. He understands that Carl brings with him a lot of value. So it's one of those kinds of relationships and one of those episodes where I was upset at so many points, but also befuddled. And I also started to think when I was watching the after show, there were so many solid points made by Sierra, by Paige, by Gabby. And, you know, there was a point that Sierra made on the after show that I thought was really solid, which was like, when it comes to Kyle seems to be supporting Carl's career journey, but not his wife's. And also, Carl has quit before. And just in comparing the ways that Kyle and Carl have been hypocritical in how they view and criticize and honestly, like, humiliate their partners, behave in a way that's so disrespectful, is so interesting when you kind of like flip the switch on their relationships. And I also kind of feel a little bit in watching the after show and watching the episode, I feel a little bit like Carl is confusing Lindsay's reactions and questions with Kyle's. Carl is treating Lindsay like he should be treating Kyle, but isn't. Carl is treating Lindsay like she's responding in a way that's similar to Kyle, and she's not. Like, I see Lindsay in this moment working on herself. I see growth from Lindsay. I don't see that from Carl. Not when it comes to relationships, not when it comes to where he, you know, wants to see himself next. He should absolutely be commended for, you know, his sober journey. That's incredible and inspiring to watch. But that's not a blanket statement over any, over every other aspect of his life. He is accountable to himself when it comes to sobriety. He's, you know, working the program. That's great. He should be congratulated for that. I genuinely wish him the best. But when it comes to accountability with his relationship with Lindsay, I'm not seeing any of that on his end. I'm really not. It feels like he's looking for, talk about soft. It feels like he's looking for a soft place to land because he knows this isn't going to work out. Or at least he's trying to punish her for the fact that he knows it's not going to work out. He is punishing her for the fact that when he proposed, which he never should have done, she said yes. And the difficulty here is Lindsay has grown, but she hasn't changed. Like, Lindsay is, we know who Lindsay is. She's grown. We've seen some, you know, development, some moments of emotional maturity. Like, she's really trying to work on herself. But he knew who Lindsay was when he started dating her, and now he's blaming her for being herself. And he's also trying to use her past relationships and past, like, toxic dynamics against her, even though she's behaving differently now. He's like, hey, heads up, if you're behaving, you know, maybe better now, I'm still going to remind you of shit that's happened to you in past relationships where somebody had a goddamn PowerPoint and everything else to try to humiliate you and make you feel like shit. And then when you respond and say, hey, that was kind of bitchy, I'm going to say, well, you know, how does it feel? He's pretending that she was trying to do a sneak attack on him. So he's responding in kind. But the difficulty there is there was no initial attack. So it's like he's seeking revenge on for something that didn't happen, or at least I don't see it. I just genuinely don't. And then is then trying to be like, well, how does it feel? It doesn't feel good. You shouldn't be doing that to begin with. But we're not seeing why you're trying to punish her. I'm not seeing the actual reason for it. I know I'm one of many people who struggles with the all or nothing fads. Juice cleanses, soup diets, keto, hours and hours of cardio. If this cycle sounds familiar to you, and it definitely does to me, there's a better, more sustainable way to lose weight. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Over 200,000 people have already chosen Row to help them lose weight. And let's talk about the big O, obesity. 4 in 10 Americans struggle with it. So there should be no shame in the weight game. It's okay to talk about weight loss, and talking about it in a way that feels healthy. With Row, you can sign up online from the comfort of your own home. That's right, the people's couch. This means no scheduling a doctor's appointment, no commute to the doctor's office, and no waiting rooms. Average weight loss is 15 to 20% in 1 year with healthy lifestyle changes. BMI and other eligibility criteria apply. Go to row.co/andyscrolls. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's RODOTCO/AndysGirls. Before being prescribed medication, patients must complete an online medical visit, lab test, and qualify for medication based on their BMI, lab results, medical history, and the discretion of a Row-affiliated healthcare provider. Sheena Marie, or as I will refer to her forever and ever, amen, Sheena Shea, has been right about a couple things in life. Number one, good as gold is a bop. Number two, apples are a delicious fruit. And also, family life is unpredictable, and a little peace of mind goes a long way. Now, as a single woman living here in New York City, Pedro Pascal, it's your time. Oftentimes, I am checking in with my friends because safety is important. And so is peace of mind. In fact, when I had a medical crisis a couple years ago, my friends didn't know where I was while I was in the hospital. The reason they knew something was wrong, true story, was because I didn't show up to a private shopping appointment downtown. That's where Life 360 comes in. Life 360 is a family connection and safety app that lets you keep track of the people and things that are most important to you. The people you need to know are okay. A focus that Sheena Shea keeps in mind. While Life 360 can be used for so many reasons, the option of ensuring that your kids are protected while giving them independence, checking on your friends, or for me, as someone who has some chronic health issues, to ensure that people know where I am. That's why I love Life 360. Another thing I love about it is that with all of these lovely European schleps, in addition to sharing my flight information with my mom, she can see exactly when I've landed because of the app. Parents have enough to worry about. Breathe easier with Life 360. Visit life360.com or download the app today and use code Andy's Girls to get 1 month of the gold package for free, plus 15% off all tiles. That's life360.com, code Andy's Girls. It's good as gold. There is something wonderful about the change of seasons here in New York. No, not just upping my electrolytes when I go for a relatively short walk. It's the smell of summer grilling, especially for whatever reason, I don't know why, in the West Village. It's sort of my seasonal clock. When I start to smell people, that sounds crazy. When I start to smell summer grilling outside, I know summer is upon us. And listen, I can't dig into my veggie dog or veggie burger without some bread or buns. Just because it's summer doesn't mean you have to cut out all the carb-heavy foods you love. Hero Bread reinvented the bread and buns that make summer great. Fluffy, delicious flavor and texture with no net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and fewer calories, plus protein and fiber. For me, getting enough fiber and cutting down on sugar are key elements to feeling better throughout the day. Hero Bread also has mouth-watering limited edition bakes, like the popular 2 gram net carb Hero Croissant. As Luann would say, c'est bon, c'est bon. Keep the carbs out of summer without compromising flavor with Hero Bread. Get 10% off your order at hero.co and use code Andy at checkout. That's Andy at hero.co. It's really frustrating. And then speaking of the after show, Gabby said something that I thought was, you know, spot on, that I actually think is emblematic of several of these toxic men currently on Bravo TV. I see it in Kyle. I see it in Carl. I see it in what Jax has been attempting, and even fucking Sandoval with those goddamn batteries, which is relying on this trope that, like, I am the man, I provide for my family, you are not stepping up in the way that I need your, like, quote unquote, support, quiet, stillness, love. I am not getting what I need from you, and I deserve it because I am the provider. But what is Carl providing? He doesn't have they all have a job. They're all paid quite well, all things considered, on their reality TV shows. So when it comes to, like, nobody has a job, so-and-so's lazy, no, all these people are showing up to work. Even if they storm off, they're still showing up. But, you know, Carl is providing, doing what exactly? Gabby on the after show said that essentially this is complete horseshit. And how can Lindsay provide, quote, softness for Carl if he is not actually the one doing the providing? That, like, if you want to have that kind of dynamic where, you know, you want to have that maybe traditional setup, more power to you. People have the absolute right to decide what kind of life and what kind of relationship works for them. And for a variety of people, having one person who is responsible for some aspect of financial providing works or makes the most sense or is necessary for their relationship, for their household, for their family. And there are many different reasons for that. And the idea that many of these guys have is that if I am making more money than you, what you owe me and owe us is a certain level of emotional support. Not really we should be supporting each other, but like we're not really having a conversation of like the guy, if in these, you know, heterosexual, heteronormative relationships, the guy is providing the majority of the income for the family to live off of, that their partner, the woman in this relationship, is supposed to provide the emotional support. You lose me a little bit on that alone, because I'm thinking to myself, shouldn't you both be supporting each other? Am I losing that? I mean, like, shouldn't that still be a fair exchange regardless of the number on someone's 1099, W-9, whatever you have, W-2, move forward, you know, do well. Isn't that a little missing piece, that we should be supporting each other, that it's not really on, regardless of who's bringing in the income, you should want to express emotion and care for this person that we're made to believe that you love. I know that it's not always 50-50. Often it's 90-10 or it's 20-80. Things go back and forth. People are even if, God forbid, you're in a committed relationship, you're still a human person and people go through shit. So the idea that someone is always going to be emotionally available to support you when maybe they have to focus on supporting themselves, it's not realistic to expect that one person in your relationship is always and should always be responsible for caring for both of you. That's a big fucking job when it comes to emotional support. But it is also interesting that these guys, Kyle, Carl, Jax, and Sandoval, are relying on this trope of like, I'm bringing in the majority of the income, so you need to do these things to support me so that I consider you a good partner, when they're not actually bringing that money in. Like, their partners are doing an equal job when it comes to the world of reality TV, sometimes more than equal. Like, if we're talking alpha, beta, Lindsay's more in an alpha role when it comes to like celebrity and stardom on Bravo than Carl ever was. In many ways, like, Carl's relationship with Lindsay, I think, propelled him to more tension with the group, surely, but more of a present role in the cast, I think, than he was before. And that's saying something, because Summer House is genuinely an ensemble show. It's one of the best parts of it, is that like there's usually like three different stories taking place in each episode, which I really, really appreciate. And circling back once again to Gabby's point was essentially Lindsay cannot provide softness for, you know, Carl if he is not actually doing the providing. Like, what is the exchange taking place? We're basing this setup against stereotypes or just a choice of how this relationship is going to work that two people might potentially make. I don't know that Lindsay ever made that choice, and I don't know that Carl is even aware of what it is that he's saying, but he's doing an effective job of saying it more than once, and it's driving me a little bit nuts. It really is. I mean, that's actually also the point that Sandoval was making with the fucking pens and the batteries. What he was trying to say was, I am the provider for this family, for our relationship, and you are not stepping up. He's relying on that. But does that trope work out very well? Not really, especially when you think about the fact that his assistant Anne was the one who was actually on Amazon Prime. You know, he goes from like, I am directly calling out and relying on this stereotype to try to say that my partner was lazy, wasn't doing enough, wasn't stepping up, wasn't doing her job on the show or her job in our love. And that's why I needed to, you know, fuck her friend. And I feel that kind of energy, honestly, present in Sandoval. I see it present in Jax when Jax is trying to humiliate Brittany. and be like, you know, I'm the one, how do you think this job, I don't do anything. How do you think this job, this house came to be? You know, it cost X number of dollars. It cost my money. It was my money that was put into this house. And Brittany interrupts and says, no, excuse me, hold on one second. We both put the same money into, you know, our mortgage, into the payment of the house, into whatever. It's like Jax is trying to rely on this stereotype to say that he's doing more in their relationship, and his version of more is focused on money. And it's just so funny because Brittany is also doing the majority of the emotional labor and is bringing in at least an equal amount of money, if not more. Because she has she has more of, I think, a marketing selling point as an influencer than he might. I mean, that's something that Carl acknowledged while trying to use it to belittle Lindsay, of saying the only reason that she brings in more income as an influencer is because she's a woman. It's so interesting how gender dynamics and gender norms and gender politics comes into play when men are trying to like silence their partners or make themselves feel better or feel strong. It's just so fascinating the way that you have to just kind of belittle someone by saying, oh, the only reason, it's not because she's like talented. The only reason that she's making more than I am is because she's a woman. And there's more opportunity, I guess, on Instagram for that. Meanwhile, have you looked at what Carl is putting on his Instagram? I don't think the issue there is gender. I think the issue there is that Lindsay is more dynamic. And so she can bring in a couple more bucks doing all of that. God. So we have that moment. We have that scene where Lindsay is being calm. She's trying to explain to him that she's not upset. She just doesn't understand or doesn't agree with the fact that Carl's version of support is, I don't even know how to say it, that like Carl's version of support is in line with their relationship. It's not working out. So he's trying to belittle her. He's trying to get her agitated. He's saying he wants softness. He's saying he wants tenderness. And then they get to that point where they're arguing and they are sort of berating each other, saying, why does the other person want to marry them? So you're having this argument out loud where you're saying like, well, why do you want to marry me if I am who I am? And I'm thinking to myself, okay, obviously this relationship isn't working out. But if you are out loud saying, well, then how the fuck are we getting married? I don't understand how weeks later someone activates that, for lack of a better term, and says, okay, valid points were made, so this wedding isn't moving forward. How that can come as a blindside, aside from the fact that someone signed on the bottom line and was like, we're done. It just makes me feel like for all of Carl's growth and emotional maturity with his sobriety, with other aspects of, you know, challenges that he's faced, I think in other areas, he has grown so much less than I gave him credit for. I genuinely do. And the way that he responds when Kyle is melting down, being like, you know, be more gentle with yourself. And he can't say that to his partner. And P.S. Kyle's doing the same goddamn thing. Kyle is being so much more generous, so much more emotionally supportive of Carl not knowing what the fuck he wants to do when he grows up than his wife. Like, he's saying to Amanda, how dare you say these things? Not only because if you, God forbid, leave, our company is going to flop, but also you're not even doing that great a job as an employee. I mean, he says on the after show that he essentially has to give the CFO a reason why he's not firing her. He has to give the CFO a reason why Amanda is still getting a check. Well, sweetie, then you should really think about that. Why are we using against Amanda the fact that she's struggling with working, not only with her husband, but working in a dynamic that's toxic? If I was Kyle, and I'm not, but if I was Kyle and I was thinking to myself, wow, these two people who I consider maybe the closest to me in my life are both talking about the you know, dynamics of, I understand a startup is going to be, it's going to be hectic. It's going to be chaotic. There's just a lot of risk involved, a lot of stress, and a lot less operational organization. But it is just interesting that like Carl had a lot to say about working there. And so in many ways does Amanda. And he's not thinking to myself, I mean, maybe there's an issue here with the setup of Loverboy that might actually make you more money. But if you were trying to shame Amanda for not being a good enough employee, then let her try to be better and doing it in a way that feels purposeful for her. Like he's trying to say, you're lazy, you're not doing enough. And what she's saying to him is like, I'm not saying I'm quitting the company. I am saying I need to figure out what I want to do because I don't feel passion in my life. And I will still support you, but there's a reason I'm not working at 7 a.m. It's not because I just want to sleep in. It's not because I want to just kind of like do whatever the fuck it is that I want to do. It's because I don't have purpose in my life. And for a lot of people, especially in that like entrepreneurial spirit, to ask someone to kind of be so focused and so devoted, like working at Loverboy is a vocation, is really tough for people who don't have that calling. And it's inexplicable for Kyle, who has it, obviously, most of all. He needs to. If the company is like flopping right now, and he says on the after show, he like lost $3 million last year, that's a chunk of change right there. If it's not doing well, then Kyle needs to go full steam ahead. But I think he also needs to think about the fact that getting Amanda working there and not being happy is not productive for her. And Kyle's version of productive is like, well, then just work harder, spend more time here. What she's telling him is, I'm not available to do that. I can't give you more because I just... It's just not connecting for me. This is not where I am meant to be. I need to have my own brand. It's, I'm sure, very complicated because she herself has said people identify me as a extension of Kyle. So imagine you're in this relationship with this person. You're more of an introvert. He's more of an extrovert, which Amanda's talked about. And you're on a TV show. So it's like in your real life, probably Kyle's like the life of the party and you're there, but you're maybe considered Kyle's girlfriend and not Amanda. And then you go on, you meet, you start dating, you're on this reality TV show, you are introduced to the show as Kyle's girlfriend. Kyle was a full-time, you know, member of the show. She came into the show because they met, they started dating, they fell in love, and then he cheated a couple times. And, you know, that's a story for another day, but talk about commitment. But you know, she was always considered an extension of him. Then she quits her job, which was her decision to do. I don't know if she regrets it. It's a question for her. I assume it comes up on the reunion. Might not. She quits her job. She joins Loverboy and they get married. And now she's an employee at this company. He tries to spin it as, no, this is our company together, but he doesn't really consider it that. He doesn't really consider this himself an equal partner with Amanda because she's telling him she doesn't consider herself an equal partner. She's acting in a way that does not consider her an equal partner. And he's pretending, I think, that their partnership is equal because that's the only way in his head that his defense makes sense. That like she owes this to us to continue working together because this is our dream. She's an equal partner in that. She's not. The difficulty for Kyle is that Amanda's really talented. And I was talking about this with some friends, like that when I think of Loverboy, I'm not a big alcohol person. I haven't actually tried Loverboy. I've had friends who tried it who really, really like it. When I think of Loverboy, I think of the brand. I think of the typography. I think of the color. I think of the fun. I think of the merch. I don't have a Loverboy hoodie. I may need to add it to the, actually, it's really not hoodie. It's a crew neck. I need to add it to the Clawfist registry because I would love a Loverboy crew neck going into, I guess, the fall, because who's going to wear, I mean, late at night, who's to say, on the water, swimming on over to the Loverboy estate in the Hamptons. But when I think of the Loverboy brand, I mean, Amanda's really at the heart of it, of what separates the company aside from the fact that it's, you know, was created by somebody who's a, you know, popular Bravo-leb reality TV star. Amanda's a huge part of that. And she's, again, not saying I'm going to leave this company and leave you stranded. What she's saying to me is you're going to get a better version of me and maybe a more active one. I keep thinking in my head that I'm going to say activated, a more active one if I am also working on creating something for myself. And that's just not, that comes to Kyle as a personal attack. And that dynamic is so fucked. It really, I don't know if Amanda regrets quitting her job and working for Loverboy. It might have been the right call. It might have been the right call for her at that point in her life. But she didn't sign, this isn't the Sea Org of alcohol startups. She didn't sign a billion-year contract to work for a dollar and then call it a day. She has, I would think, the option and opportunity to say, there's other stuff that I would like to do now. You would think a fellow entrepreneur would get that. Kyle's response to all of this is like, people don't understand how much stress I'm under and the fact that the company is hanging on by a thread. That's not Amanda's responsibility. And also the way that he's responding and saying, you know, like if she was more productive, if she was more engaged, Loverboy would be doing better. But I don't blame her for the fact that Loverboy isn't doing great. I don't know who's responsible. I know that, you know, from what I've heard, alcohol startups and independent companies are incredibly, incredibly difficult to run. He's talking about losing all this money and taking out all these loans. I don't know if he's taking out loans because investors weren't interested or he's made the decision that he wants to have more ownership because, you know, the possibility that they sell the company at some point would mean he would make more money in the end. But who's going to be with you to cash that check, babe? Because this isn't going great right now. Is just not going great. And Amanda, it's like Kyle is using her maybe sadness, anxiety against her, trying to say that that's an example of her being a terrible employee, then let her go. If you're saying on the after show that you have to convince your CFO of why this person should get a check, then why are you yelling so much when she's telling you that taking a step back would be good for her and good for you? But like, why are you fighting so hard for her to stay? And Kyle's version of, again, of fighting so hard for her is like, and then she'll die, then she'll commit even more. That's not an available option. You saying Amanda needs to give me 100% is not an option being presented. If your version of 100% is working 30 hours a day, that's not an option that's available. She's not going to go more all in than she is right now, at least not in the ways that you want. What she's saying is, I'll still work for the company, but I need to do stuff for myself. After watching Lala and Sandoval's behavior on the Vanderpump Rules reunion, I developed such an intense thirst. I guess it's contagious when you're talking about Vanderpump Rules. So thank goodness for Fiji Water. Fiji Water is the number one premium imported bottled water brand in the United States. It has a perfectly balanced 7.7 pH, and unlike the other two top premium bottled water brands, Fiji Water's electrolytes are 100% naturally occurring. In fact, Fiji Water has more than double the electrolytes as the other two, giving it signature soft, smooth taste. As someone who has spoken on the pod time and time again about the importance of having electrolytes, especially this summer, Fiji fits into my lifestyle so well. Before going on a little bit of a stroll, just a short one in these warmer summer temps, I grab my Fiji Water and I am out the door. Unlike some other premium bottled waters in the market, there's no ingredient statement on Fiji Water because there's nothing added to the water itself. Fiji Water is Earth's finest water. And as someone who's currently deep in the throes of watching Bravo's Finest Television, also known as Summer House, I know that having Fiji Water by my side is keeping me hydrated and refreshed. So Lala, take that. Now that the temperature is rising, and I don't just mean the heat coming between Lindsay versus Carl, it can be really difficult to get my hair under control. I have like this wavy, curly, frizzy, natural texture that I genuinely love, but it can be really difficult to find a product that works for my hair without feeling heavy and genuinely counteracts the frizziness that I get naturally if I don't blow out my hair. That's why I love Way. Whether your strands are fine, medium, or like mine, thick, Way has shampoo and conditioner that's your type. I love the detox shampoo because it does exactly that. It detoxes your hair. And because I am a spiritual blonde and do have some color processing, the shampoo helps clean away all the schmutz that accumulates, leaving my hair feeling lighter and better than it did before. God bless that apple cider vinegar. And yes, for that frizz, I rely on the anti-frizz cream. I put it in after I shower, do a little scrunch of my hair, and I'm good to go. Way keeps me looking like me, just a little bit elevated. Jesse Solomon, have you heard my call? If you want volume, Way's Fine Hair and Conditioner will give you a lift without weighing you down. Not sure what your type is? Take Way's hair quiz to find out. Wash your way to healthier hair with shampoos and conditioners made just for you. Go to theouai.com and use code ANDY for 15% off your entire purchase. That's theouai.com, code ANDY. And this is what separates Summer House from every other show on Bravo right now, all three of them, is that the responses of the women in the cast is honestly profound. The way that Sierra and Paige rallied for Amanda was important. The fact that, and I didn't take this for granted, Amanda rallied for them in her responses to Kyle after the fact was important. The fact that she said, no, my friends were right. I fully support them and how they're supporting me was important to see. This is the season that I thought we were going to have for Vanderpump Rules. This is what girl code looks like. This is what like we support other women looks like. It looks like these two people who are friends with this person having prior conversations with her about like, it feels like you're lost. It feels like you're, you know, kind of at sea a little bit. How can we correct course here? How can we support you? And we're holding you accountable. We are. We're saying we will support you. We want to be here for you. But we're also saying what we're seeing right now isn't great. You're not seeing that with Carl and Kyle, with their relationship. You're just not. They're just not at that level of emotional maturity. And they're not able to be smart with their rage. Their rage, to me, feels selfish. It might also be reactive, but it feels selfish. It's all about their own needs. When Carl is comforting Kyle, do you see the way that Carl keeps like referencing his own relationship? The way he's like, oh yeah, you know, Kyle's upset, Kyle's crying. Carl will redirect in a passive aggressive way to like shit on Lindsay and how he's talking about his own, you know, toxic dynamics. I'm not seeing that with Paige and Sierra. Sierra's not referencing anything with West. Paige isn't referencing anything with Craig Conover, America's sweetheart. In fact, on the after show, Paige and Sierra triple down in what they said about Kyle and the fact that they felt like his, you know, hashtag boy tears were potentially manipulative, that maybe he wasn't trying to be manipulative, but the impact there of him just coming out and crying was a distraction against his ability to be accountable for being a piece of shit. Like, I want to know how Amanda felt when she saw that scene of him calling her a fucking bitch. And we cannot blame this on the fact that the conversation started after he had a couple drinks, because when Kyle was more sober, when he, you know, the next morning, I did not see a great version of him come out. And I still haven't seen one on the after show. He's expressing some sense of regret for the fact that he wasn't able to respond to her immediately, but it's because people don't understand how difficult his work is. He has a couple knocks about content creators, that they don't have staffs of 30. Well, I don't know. Look at Paige's business plan. You know, Paige, I think, has a business plan that's working for her, that's making her some money. So I wouldn't necessarily discount that. Like, he's having some shit to say about the fact that she has a podcast. Having a podcast is not like the easiest thing that you can do. There's a lot of shit involved in that. And she has a very, very successful one. She is her entrepreneur. She is her own entrepreneur that started as an Instagram Live during COVID, did it not? I thought isn't that how Giggly Squad started out? They were just doing Instagram Live, and I don't mean to minimize it, but they literally would just start it as Instagram Lives, and they expanded it, became a big fucking hit. They have sold out shows all over the country. Like, that's a significant source of income for her, for Hannah. And it shouldn't be discounted or mocked because she's not selling something in a retail location, in a store, in a bar, whatever else. It feels like Kyle is telling us he's learned something, but then he adds in these little jabs at people, including, you know, his wife's friends, including his wife herself. That's just so dismissive and so, rude. Can I just say rude? It's a little bit of a downer, because I do think that Kyle has the capacity to be more reflective. I actually think, and I know this is, it's a low bar, but I actually think that Kyle has more of a capacity to be reflective and think about things than Carl does. And I think that's because Kyle is just further along in his life maybe than Carl is, but I'm not seeing Carl have that, but maybe that's also because Carl is just going through a breakup and he just has so much anger that it's clouding everything else. But maybe it's a question of direction. I'm just not seeing that as much in Carl as I certainly am in Kyle. And all of it is just so hard to watch. Like, Kyle cannot listen to Amanda talk without feeling like her sharing her hopes and dreams are a personal attack. She's not actually talking about him. She's talking about herself. And yet he thinks of her as an extension of who he is. I don't think it's just because she works at Loverboy. I think he's thinking of her, and he's thinking of the fact that we own Loverboy together. That's obviously not the dynamic that we have ever seen take place. It feels like he views her as an extension of himself in the way that the audience for many years has, in the way that Amanda has viewed herself as an extension of Kyle. She's now saying, I don't want that to happen anymore, but he won't let her do that because he wants her to remain that extension. And he thinks that she's saying, I guess, that because she wants to find joy in her life, that means that's all he's doing. It doesn't really track. It's hard to entirely understand Kyle's perspective because it feels so defensive and so self-involved. And then we just have to say that, I don't know, a friend sent me a photo of the cast reunion looks picture, and everyone looks fucking phenomenal. It's like great. I think just all in all, like, the palette, sort of muted colors, but light, clean, feels fresh, feels young, still feels individual. Everyone looks great. And my friend was like, essentially check Danielle, like, everyone has essentially a hand on the person next to them or an arm draped over somebody else. And then Danielle is just kind of like posing just at the end of the, you know, sort of on the outskirts of the cast photo. And it is, to me, really, it's kind of a look that Danielle's immediate reaction to Kyle's upset is to triple down and say things like, your own partner isn't celebrating you. How terrible is that? She's just so annoying to me at points of the season. I don't know how the reunion is going to work out for her, but I'm not getting a great energy from her. It's not as bad as it was during the Gabby upset episode, where Gabby was like crying and emotional and Danielle did not respond well, let alone you know, Balloon Joe, Balloon Guy Joe. I don't know how the reunion is going to go for her, but it is to me kind of interesting that for a season that has really bonded all of the women together, it feels like Danielle's a little bit of an exception to that. Like the fact that she's closest with Kyle and Carl, it says something to me. It just does. And this season has been so powerful. I really do think, like, for me, everyone is doing great. There's obviously a lot to discuss. I cannot say enough about Paige and Sierra. I just can't say enough about the fact that they challenge Kyle in real time. They're saying shit. They're supporting each other. Obviously, there's some awkwardness and some clunkiness right now with West and Sierra. The fact that this man took her horseback riding and then was like, LOL, I can't have a girlfriend, but I want you to come back for Thanksgiving. Like, that doesn't make sense. To dangle the carrot of saying, I'd like to essentially introduce you to my family. Introduce her as what? A cast member on your show? If you're saying I want to Thanksgiving, when I think Thanksgiving, I think turkey, tofurkey, you know, gluten-free vegan stuffing. I have a version of it that's grain-free. I actually think it's great, but I probably wouldn't, you know, present it to other people. It's like my version of edible, which I think is delicious because it's technically cooked. I just, for West, it's just the computing in the brain of a straight man in his late 20s, or as Sierra calls it on the after show, he's 30. We skip ahead. The computing in his head of like dangling this emotional lifesaver of just hang in there with me because I want you to come back for Thanksgiving. But also, I can't have any kind of commitment of any kind and, you know, I'm going to just kind of look at you as a situationship for the next 5 to 7. That's not great. What is that? Are we supposed to feel like the, you know, half-assed invitation or maybe genuine offer of having someone come meet your family is the salve that we're supposed to put over the fact that you have a real significant disinterest in, I can't even say settling down, but committing to her? I mean, I really felt Sierra's responses of like, well, you know, keep Thanksgiving in your back pocket. Because if you're saying to me that you need to get your shit together and your version of getting your shit together is just doing what you want because that's what you've always done, that's not good enough for me. And that's why, P.S., we haven't slept together. Because I don't want to continue talking to you if there's in that way and having hope, or I don't want to like further our relationship and become physically intimate if you're telling me that that physical intimacy doesn't come with anything else. Because for me, she's saying, when I, you know, sleep with someone, I catch feelings. I think that's the phrase that she used. And what he is telling her is like, feelings aren't facts. So at the end of the day, I'm not ready for the thing that you want. Or rather, I don't even think it's ready. I don't want the thing that you want. I'm choosing something else. But also, would you like to come back for some turkey and pie? I mean, who hasn't been in a relationship like that? Of someone just saying that stuff and maybe doing some of that stuff, but not having any other example of committing, maturity, connection, whatever. Like you're saying these things that sound nice, but you're doing them in a little bit of a way that feels like a cover up. Just a little bit of a way. And I'm not saying that I still like West. Excellent casting. I think he's smart in many ways, really, really funny, super charismatic. Just really not the guy that I think Sierra deserves. Unless he, you know, makes another, he could wake up tomorrow and say, I'm ready. I don't know what his version of ready is. I don't know that it's a great idea when you come into a possible relationship thinking that the idea of calling it a relationship is some sort of burden in your life. I don't know why he's replaced like excitement of committing to this person with, oh God, no. What about all the other options? What about the fact that I get to do whatever it is that I want? I mean, the flip side of that is you get to do it with this person. And then there's another version of that conversation. What does it mean to spend time with each other? Which is closer to the tail end of the episode when Carl makes the decision that Lindsay needing a moment to herself to maybe calm down, to get a chance to breathe, is a personal attack. It's so fun that we have these bookends of Kyle thinking that Amanda, you know, having a dream is an attack against him, his livelihood, their future together, I don't know, his manliness, whatever else. And Carl thinks that Lindsay saying or not saying, I need to have an afternoon with Danielle and just like detach and have a chance to think, is an example of her being a bad partner. It's a car ride. He spent how many weekends not staying home on Friday, coming up the next day to alleviate fights, to give them some separation. That was an entire night. And P.S., it was a night that could have been filmed for the show. And he took a step back and was like, for our relationship, for myself, I just want us to be able to have a little bit of time where we can, you know, interact with people on our own. And because he wasn't the person who needed it, now it's bad. I couldn't understand any of it. Also, as a New Yorker, driving from the Hamptons to the city, it could be 3 hours, it could be six, you have no idea. But I don't think it's the first car ride Carl has ever taken in his life where he's driving solo. That's what a podcast is for. You could listen to your castmates. You could listen to Pages and have some giggles and feel like you're a part of a squad. Why are you losing your mind? It's because Lindsay is making the decision and you don't feel like you're in charge. And you also want to make her look as bad as possible. And again, dangle these carrots that the relationship is rotted and it's her fault. He is acting in a way that is so bratty and so emotionally immature. The simple fact that he's saying out loud, wait a second. So you're going with your friend for a couple hours, so I have to drive our luggage back? Yeah, babe, that's why you have a car. It's to bring luggage back. Spoiler alert. Wait until he finds out that you can check in luggage at an airport and have it, you know, exist in a part of the plane that you don't see at all times, or God forbid, be sent on another one. Wait until he finds out that sometimes people travel with luggage that they don't always see. And if you were a partner, where's the softness that we're seeing Carl demand or expect from Lindsay that he's not giving to her? Like, what the absolute fuck? You can't even handle the fact that you have to lift her bag into the car and maybe bring it into your $4,000 a month apartment. If you guys are wasting that much money on your lease, my guess is they have a doorman. My guess is it's not going to be that fucking hard. Do you know how hard it is for me when I go on a trip to live in a walk-up? Like, that's a stress position and I have a back injury. Carl is not dealing with that because he has a lot more money to waste than I do with the cost of where it is he's chosen to live, except he no longer lives there, but is still paying the lease, and good for him. He shouldn't have a choice in that matter. I'm kind of into that. That poor guy now is paying half of a $14,000 a month rent and also living separately. That's a lot of money to lose. That's a lot of money to shit out. But anyway, he's hearing Lindsay say, he's asking her essentially to repeat out loud, wait a second, so I have to drive myself from the Hamptons alone. I am an adult man who has to drive a car myself. And we're not even, you know, doing well in our relationship today. So, you know, they would be bickering that entire fucking time. So he's saying to her, I would rather us bicker because we need to be together than not. And when she's like, LOL, yeah, that means you're gonna drive the luggage back. That's how luggage works. That's what happens when you live together and someone isn't going to be with you in the car for 3 hours of your life. He should be grateful for that time. I certainly don't believe that he needs her there because they need to support each other. It's a fucking car ride. You guys hate each other. What do you think is going to happen? You're going to continue to fight. So he leaves without taking her luggage with her? That is so deeply obnoxious. I actually couldn't believe it. And as they talked about on the after show, Cacio e Pepe, which was the nickname for the car that made me laugh. Danielle's car is like a teeny tiny car, and it was Gabby and Lindsay and Danielle in it. They could barely fit their luggage in the car. They had a super awkward ride home, which is what Carl wanted. He wanted Lindsay to be punished for the fact that she made a decision that he has made before. He doesn't like it when it comes out of her mouth. He wants to make it look as bad as possible. I couldn't believe it. I just saw a level of obnoxious coming from him that was just, it was wild to watch. It was genuinely wild to watch. He's blaming her for setting some boundaries, taking some time to herself. He's blaming her for his own career confusion. He's blaming her for him not feeling, I guess, confident enough in his own decisions or lack thereof. She said as much. She's not responsible for that. And it's just going to be so interesting on the reunion, because I think in the ways that Kyle keeps like all of his ownership of Loverboy and its, you know, current, you know, difficulties and financial setbacks and whatever else, he keeps all of that really, really tight. And his own identity in Loverboy, it's like he kind of loses his shit when he feels like Amanda's contesting any of that by introducing the fact that she has her own life to leave. She is also her own person, her own human person, and wants to be considered as much. And I see the same aspects of this in Carl, but when it comes to Lindsay's identity in their relationship, he needs Lindsay to be identified in the ways that she was for many, many seasons on Summer House, of being a mess. He needs her to be identified as that. I don't know that he will do a great job of taking ownership for things that we are watching in real time, because I'm not seeing evidence of that on the after show. I don't feel instinctively like he has an understanding of his own toxicity. I think he just feels like his toxicity is because of Lindsay, and he wants to make that clear at all times, which is why he's going to question things, which is why he's going to, I'm not going to manipulate her, try to make her feel like she's crazy, try to make us feel like she's saying things that are crazy, or maybe just instinctively try to get her mad, because that will be the easiest way of getting out of this. I don't know. They both have so much anger and rage that I don't know how the reunion is going to be expressed, but I do know that it's going to be a very important watch. Listen, I feel like I talked about two things for 6 hours, so I don't even know what I said on this episode. So this is also why I'm so thankful to the Satchel Spectacular that is up now. It is 21 of your Satchels of Gold, your thoughts and feels, questions and concerns, named in honor of Her Holiness Kelly Cloran Ben Simone, a 2-hour two-parter talking about all things VPR, talking about Summer House, some stuff on New Jersey, some stuff about BravoCon, Andy, Reality Reckoning. And I do just want to note, I haven't talked on this episode at all about what Jesse is facing, because I have my own little triggers this week when it comes to health stuff. So I cannot, I don't have it in me to be emotional. And I know that I'm just too connected to what he's going through. So sometimes you might notice that I haven't brought up big moments. And sometimes it's because I've genuinely forgot. And sometimes it's because I have my own boundaries. And that's why I'm so glad this is not a recap podcast. But I do just want to say that, you know, the scenes that we've seen of Jesse and Wes together have been incredibly impactful. Jesse's story in and of itself has been incredibly impactful. I love him. I love him in all of the ways that matter. And I'm hoping for, you know, a good resolution and a good answer on the next episode. But it's some of this stuff is complicated to watch. So I don't want to ignore it entirely. I don't want it to come off as I'm minimizing what he's going through. I'm actually hopefully saying the opposite, that it's so compelling to watch, but also so connective for me that I gotta, you know, we don't want an episode that ends when I cry. Not today. There are so many others in the archive that feature those emotions. You can see them. You can listen to them now. And also you can see a little bit of that verklempt energy, noting, you know, some stuff that I'm going through on the Instagram. Put a little post up so you can read about that on IG at Dame Galley. Again, listen to those Satchel Spectacular 2 hours of exclusive bonus content up now on the AG page at patreon.com/AndyScrolls. I really don't know if this episode made a lick of sense. I really don't. So I'm hoping for the best. And I am thankful that I will hopefully have another shot. So more to come. Continue sending me your satchels, your thoughts and feels, because I'm really curious for how you feel about VPR, P2, The Valley, obviously Summer House, New Jersey, which is still a thing, and so much more. And thanks for listening to this episode, guys. The twists and turns that we take is a little bit of a fascinating ride. So thanks for being on the ride with me. A car we're taking together with some of my emotional baggage in the back. Baggage that I know that Carl is never going to lift on his own. So thankfully I have the AGs. All right, guys, thanks for listening and I will chat with you soon. Bye-bye.
Growing businesses and finance professionals, you need Bill Spend and Expense, the free-to-use spend management software. It's powered by the Bill Divvy Corporate Card, which helps growing companies scale with credit lines of $500 to $15 million, automated expense reports, and as many virtual cards as you need. For a limited time, get $500 when you get started with Bill Spend and Expense. Request a demo at bill.com/get500. Terms and conditions apply. Advertised credit ranges are not guaranteed and are determined at approval. Card issued by Cross River Bank, member FDIC.